Blog Talk Radio.
Hour for September 2nd, 2010. I'm your host, Colt Runyon. Tonight, I'll be joined by Joe Carson, who is the president of Periferia, and we'll have a discussion about the life and the work of surrealist painter, poet, neo-pagan philosopher, and ceremonial magician, Frederick Charles Adams. Now, Fred and his consort, Lady Svetlana, founded Periferia in 1967. I said 69, actually 67. Periferia was the first and still the most elegant expression of goddess-worshipping, nature-focused, neo-pagan religion in America. Joe Carson's recently released film, Dancing with Gaia, features Fred giving instruction in landform yoga, and also it displays his marvelous artwork. Fred Adams was certainly a master magician. He and Svetlana recreated the ancient Greek Eleusinian mysteries, and they perfected a joyous round of 9 seasonal ceremonies. Now, quite frankly, there would be no OTA seasonals without the original inspiration of Periferia. So, that's what we have on tap for tonight, and one more little thing that I'll introduce here before we bring Joe on board here and get started on our discussion. We have a Periferian publication that we brought out, the 9 Royal Passions of the Year, which we're going to be talking more about as we get into the show. And in the introduction, I said, Frederick Adams has been called a modern American William Blake. The majority of his work is on mystical themes relating to the divine feminine and the relationship of the mother goddess and her maiden savioress to sacred nature. Fred Adams and his consort Lady Svetlana were among the first founders and still the most elegant proponents of goddess religion in the Western Hemisphere. And through their religious fellowship, Periferia, Fera means wilderness, and Feria means celebration, they inspired thousands of modern romantics and neo-pagans with their lyrical, paradisial visions, profound ecological and spiritual philosophy, elegant ceremonial rites, and stunning artwork. Periferia was far above the level of pop culture, witchcraft, and psychedelic flower power, and yet the mystical aspirations of the 1960s gave Periferia its few years of glory here in Southern California. And fortunately for myself and for Joe Carson and some of the rest of us, those few years of glory we were able to share with Fred and Svetlana, and that was a beautiful and a magical time. So, Joe, go ahead and give us a call in, and let's see if we can recreate go back to the old days and talk about how Periferia was and sort of introduce this group to us. This group that we have to the Periferian experience. And so I'm waiting for your call. And in the meantime, while you're calling in, You had mentioned that we would each talk about how we first met Fred and Svetlana. Seeing as how I met both of them before you did, I guess I'll go first on that. While I'm waiting for you to call in here. I had my vision, you know, of oh, she's here now. Okay, Joe, are you there? Joe, are you on the air?
Oh,
oh,
can you hear me?
All right, you're there. Good. That's good. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Wow, we couldn't do this one without you, for heaven's sake. I mean, you know, you are now the grand mistress of Periferia, and that is, and I hope that's not male chauvinist to say that. I shouldn't call you the grand master, I don't think. But anyway,
it's a real privilege. It's an honor.
Well, you richly and profoundly deserve it, because you've been a dedicated Periferian for gosh knows how long has it been now? It's been since 1970.
Well, since I'm embarrassed to say, I guess I got started back in 1970. So
yep.
I guess that dates me a little.
That's when we both got started. And as I said, I looking at your agenda here for our points that we're going to talk about tonight. I noticed you got first off. You said each of us talks a little bit about how we first met Fred and Svetlana, and I suppose because I met them first, I'll start off on that, and then as soon as I, you know, get to my point, then you can pick it up. Anyway, I had this, you know, I think everybody on this show knows I had this whopper of a vision as a result of this terrible gallbladder thing I had, and I came out of my illness, and I thought, well, I'm going to be a ceremonial magician. Of course, we had the psychedelic thing was going at the time, you know, and all that. And I prowled around Hollywood, and I prowled around Los Angeles looking for people who knew something about magic and who were really, you know, I was looking for a master, really. I literally was. I couldn't find anybody. Most of the people I found were just really, that's really not, well, I'm not going to badmouth them, but gosh, they were just a sort of a sad lot. And I was about ready to give up because I really wanted to find a master. And I had this, one of the witches that I knew, Rita, was a Russian. And she said, well, I have this friend, Svetlana, and she's Russian too. And she has this consort, and his name is Fred, and you should meet them. And I said, well, all right, Rita, come on, take me out there in Pasadena, I'll meet him, you know. I was about ready to give up, anyway. And so Rita took me out to little Ishtar house out there, and you've been there, of course, you know, and out there to Mountain Avenue in Pasadena. And here's this little bungalow, and it's all fixed up. This little bungalow is fixed up like something out of the Hobbits. I mean, it's a fairyland. And this little bungalow, and everything was just elvish, and there was all the artwork and the way they had worked the flowers and the wood and everything in. It was just absolutely beautiful. And I went inside the house, and this beautiful creature in nothing, wearing nothing but gosmer veils, spangled, sparkling gosmer veils, comes out with her hair all piled up like Helen of Troy. And she comes out, and it's like a radiant vision. And she says, I am Lady Svetlana. Welcome to Periferia. And then, of course, out comes the master himself. And that was like being in the presence of the King of the Elves. And I knew at that point that I had found the master. Now, you take it up
really
from there.
It really did have that elvish quality. You're right. And just a gentle soul from the beginning. Every time that we ever met, I just was impressed with that gentleness that he had. And you were kind enough to take me on over there to his house, a little, I guess, not too long after you met him. And I had a similar experience of going into that house and then just being amazed. Everywhere I look, it's paintings all over the walls, floors, and ceilings of the goddess. The arches over the room dividers were painted with images of the triple goddess. I had never seen anything like this before. I hadn't really heard about the idea of people being into the goddess. It just wasn't out there. And I was just overwhelmed in a really wonderful way. I couldn't believe it. And then they showed us in the backyard, they had turned it into like a paradise of apple trees and flowering fruit trees. And later on when we joined the group, they did their initiations partly out there in that lovely arbor area. And it was really magical.
Oh, it was absolutely. It was magical. And I want to stress the point because, of course, this is the Hermetic Hour, so I want to assure people that Fred and Svetlana, they were magicians. I mean, and they were not only were they magicians, they were magicians of what you could genuinely call the Hermetic tradition, because they very much believed in the balance of the elements and the astrology was there. They had the alphabet, they had the astrology, they had the master mandalas, they had everything that a Hermetic magician a real adepts would have. So
I
this really was.
When you say alphabet, you mean the tree calendar alphabet, right?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, good. Thanks for reminding me. We should mention that, you know, the rites of Eleusis, and the maiden savioress Cori, of course, that's the core of the Farfarian mythological tradition. But as Fred said in one of his writings, he said, however, this translates out to the British tradition and into the Druid tradition. It gets into that. And the link here is Robert Graves is the White Goddess. And you remember, you know, that the White Goddess was very, very influential on Fred.
Certainly was.
In fact, oh, yeah. In fact, the two of them, both Fred and Smith, they went out and visited Robert Graves out on Majorca.
Yeah, and they have, I still have records of the letters, you know, that they were sent back and forth. Fred was phenomenal about keeping track of every single letter that was significant at all, and I have quite a pile, including all of these ones to Robert Graves.
Oh yeah, well Robert Graves, the White Goddess, of course. This is a landmark book, and we joke about it. It's the thinking witches. It's just for thinking witches. It's not easy reading, but it does trace this, the goddess worshiping tradition. It traces it from ancient Greece all the way through to what you might call the Druid tradition, and he has, of course, the tree calendar, which Fred certainly adopted, and that became their magical alphabet that they based the 13-month calendar. And of course, you know, we still have that cosmic tuning dial, that wonderful cosmic tuning dial he did with all the moon phases and everything.
Right.
Yeah, and that was the center of the indoor temple. You remember, Fred was a really, really good astrologer, and of course that's really, really part of it's the root of Hermetic magic is astrology, and so Fred, I would say really Fred was a Hermetic magician.
What attracts you to him, and I think I admire that about him. But for me, he was primarily a poet of the goddess, more than anything else. And, you know, I just want to kind of round out the picture here. He was such an amazing artist, and his imagery of the goddess was, you know, phenomenal, and just his whole life basically was spent celebrating the goddess. So, he was a magician, but he was far more than a magician, too, because he did so many things artistically that were just beautiful. I was thinking, Polk, now I wonder if you'd just give me a moment here. I would like to maybe set a little tone by sharing with your audience just a short piece of poetry that he called the Cori Prayer. And it's really brief, but you'll get an idea if you listen to it of just the beauty of the way he wove words together to create magic. May I do that?
Sure.
Okay. this is written by Fred and used in just about every one of their Fairfarian ceremonies. O holy maiden of the kindling quick, of merging mist and amazing echo, the innocent bounty of the trees bears your fairy flesh of wildness, wonder, magic, mirth, and love. Your beauty seals our bridal with all life. The dance of your green pulse unfolds all souls, all bodies, and all blessings from earth's fragrant form. Evwi kori kai kuros, evwi potnia kai potnios, awi ya.
Yeah, kori bless. Wow.
Yeah.
That was beautiful, Joe. One of the things that we talked to get back to your agenda here, we talked about how Fairfaria came about.
Right.
They incorporated in 1967. But before that, in 1963, from 1963 on, they had a fellowship called Hesperides, the Sacred Isles, the Paradisial Isles. And this is where a lot of the Fairfarian ideas got started in Hesperides. Now, we should mention, of course, that Fred and Svetlana were both very much vegetarians, and they were really, they almost wanted to be fruitarians, and this is leading into
your...
They
were really into fruit.
They were into fruit, all right.
Yeah,
and
trees, and like the sort of how a tree just generously gives its fruit, and it doesn't harm the tree for us to take the fruit and eat it.
That's
and like,
right.
You know, eating any root vegetable kills the vegetable, but fruits just give it in this generous way, and that was such a delicate way to relate to nature, is to live on something that's given freely.
Yes, so this was going to be, our paradise was going to be an orchard.
Yes.
And yeah, it really was. Which leads me into, you were telling me, and I didn't remember this one, but you were telling me that about the Hesperidean the fruit crush.
Oh, you're talking about the fruit squash. Yeah, that was
fruit squash.
I wasn't early enough to participate in this one, but I did hear about it. I guess that a group of them went over to a river. It must have been a fairly private river, and they got a whole truckload of extremely ripe fruit, lots of things that were soft and squishy. And one thing about Fred and Fairfairy was it was very oriented towards the beauty of the human body and of being out in nature naked, you know, the nakedness of the gods and the nakedness of the humans. It was all celebrated as something beautiful. And so they would go out to this river and squash this overripe fruit all over each other's bodies and, you know, jump up and down and, you know, get into the river and generally cavort about. And it sounded pretty sensual to me. And a lot of fun. So that was the famous fruit squash at the river.
Oh, well, yeah, all day, like I said, I would have liked to have seen that. We had so many good times doing these sort of things. I remember though, you know, and sometimes it was really humorous. I remember Fred and Svetlana went on the grand tour, and they took the grand tour over to Europe, and they left us with certain tasks that we were supposed to do. And of course, Fred had taken all of California and had laid it out, surveyed it in ley lines, magical ley lines. And he went to relating this to feng shui and relating this to what he called the topocosm, and he had determined from all of this that the exact spiritual center of Los Angeles was there were these two mystical meridians where they bisected, and he had marked this on the map, and he said, you should go there. He said, you people should go there, and you should find this spot exactly, and you'll be at the spiritual center of Los Angeles, of the greater Los Angeles area. So we dutifully did this. Jim Ardonius and I don't know, you weren't in on this one, I guess.
No, I didn't go there.
Jim Ardonius and myself and Chris Quinn and I think Pat.
And Ellen.
And we Yeah, we went and we found this place, and it was in, out in the Baldwin Hills, and it was in a terrible, deserted, barren, sort of a declivity, and we got down to the bottom of the declivity, kept following this azimuth, and we got down to the bottom of the declivity, and there was this old concrete cistern at the bottom, and then we got, that's it, I said, we found it, this is it, this is the cistern, and we found the cistern, it was right where the two lines, right in the middle of the dry cistern was a dead tarantula.
Oh, dear.
So we said, well, we better not tell Fred what the spiritual center of Los Angeles is. But I think, you know, there's some truth in that anyway.
Just like to point out that this apparently used to be a spring, and a sacred spring is often the center, the spiritual center of a place.
Well, then again, on the other hand, when you think about Los Angeles and maybe that deserved to be the spiritual center. I don't know.
Well,
but,
I think probably it didn't used to be dry, but let's go on.
You've done a film which is I think absolutely wonderful, and it represents in a way it's your magnum opus. You've been working on this film, Dancing with Gaia, in one form or another. You've been working on this for about 20 years.
Yeah.
Some of it, the scenes in the Tom's that were shown in the Tom Snyder Show, I think you have in there. And I want you to talk a little bit about that film because we want people to to order that film from you and see Fred. And hear him giving his lectures and see him doing landform yoga and get a look at the artwork and then the other marvelous things that you've done. So tell us a little bit about the film.
Well, thanks for asking. Dancing with Gaia is about the nexus of earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the return of the goddess seen as Gaia. And I interviewed 15 visionaries, many of them people that Fred directed me toward. Basically, I started shooting interviews with him on audio tape in 1988, because I was just concerned. He was getting older and his health wasn't great. I was concerned that he wouldn't be around too much longer. And then I started to shoot video interviews in 89. And Fred, totally pushed me to travel to all these sacred sites in Europe and around in the U.S. and the Middle East, and to push and to also interview more people than just him. He especially wanted me to interview women, which is what got me started on connecting with all these really fascinating people, most of them very charismatic, interesting people with a following of their own who have, insight into what this nexus is, of how it is that, sacred sexuality is tied up with earth energy and how we can actually connect with the earth as part of our own living body in an extended way and in an ecstatic way. And so the film, brings out all this wonderful information and is set in these utterly beautiful, transformative locations of these sacred sites, old ancient prehistoric stone circles and sites throughout Greece and the Mediterranean and even in Turkey as some of the earliest goddess places. So it was a real journey for me to make this film and to put it together. I'm just so thrilled that it's finally available to people. It's a feature-length film, 123 minutes long, and it's available at GaiaDancing.com. It's just a marvelous thing. I'm really pleased that we've had a lot of screenings that have been well-attended, and word is just starting to get out about it. So.
I think that everybody that has an interest in the history of our magical experience in California should, whether you're into the goddess thing or not, this is part of our history. This is part of the California magical experience. And you've made it, of course, extended it to a worldwide magical experience. I wanted to stress that Fred was a hermetic magician, even though I know you don't think of him that way, but he certainly was. But this is an aspect, this was an aspect of magic that we need, and we really need this aspect, because what Fred and Svetlana accomplished was they spiritualized the earth and the eco zone. They made the world magical. And what, unfortunately, some aspects of magic shun the world. You get the Gnostic view, and we're all, the world's terrible. Just get away from that, you know. Get away from all this, and go up and, you know, try to return to the stars and all that. So what Fred, he made the world magical. And, of course, Svetlana also. Now, we should point out that Svetlana wrote a lot of, most of the rituals, actually. Fred had his wonderful philosophical ideas and his visions and all of this, but when it came to writing out the scripts, Svetlana was pretty much responsible for doing it, and she was a genius in her own right.
Yeah, and she knew how to throw a really great party, too.
Oh, yeah. But I think that the idea of spiritualizing nature is a wonderful contrast to some of our magic that tends to just deny nature.
Right.
You know, I remember I saw a film when I was a kid. Fred liked this film too. I saw a film by Jean Cocteau when I was a college kid called Orpheus. I don't know whether you ever saw that.
Right.
But one of the things about Orpheus that just stunned me when I saw it when I was in college was that here was a film that made the world itself magical. There was this was magic going on all around you in the world that you lived in. And this was what Fred and Svetlana managed to do. They managed to make our world magical.
Right.
And also,
specifically
yeah.
the wild part of nature was what is magical. Not the cities and the technology, but wild nature is where the magic is.
Oh, absolutely. And nature as nature, not nature that man has fiddled around and messed up with. This is, of course, you can say, oh, right, well, this is Thoreau and this is Rousseau and Thoreau and all that. Yeah, but there is an absolute awesome beauty in nature, and why should we deny that?
Right.
And yeah.
And
why not
there's a whole, what Fera Feria offers is a whole, I mean, it's called a fairy faith because it looks to the fairy traditions and the imagery and the feeling tone that you get from the whole world of fairy as a real primary inspiration for what Fera Feria is and as a model for how we can relate to the earth in a way where we're not abusing it, we're celebrating it.
That is absolutely true. Now, one of the things I want to mention before it slips my mind, because I think this is important. We've been talking, you and I have discussed before about, well, when are we going to be ready for a Farfarian revival? We keep saying, well, we're not quite ready yet. We got to let all that born again stuff that was popular during the Bush administration, we got to let that completely die out, before we can have a Farfarian revival and all this. But I do want to point out, and I pointed this out to Fred, there is, however, a fairy movement started. Yeah.
You know, the fairy con, right? That's big. Huge.
Fairy cons, yeah. And I tried to get Fred, in fact, I think I mentioned it to you, I tried to get Fred interested in a couple of years ago, before he died, somehow or other getting with these people and getting to let them know about Fairy. But Fred was, by that time, he was too tired. Svetlana was, going down, and he just couldn't, he just wasn't up to it.
Yeah.
But this fairy movement now, they need to know about Fera Feria. They really do. And we have some listeners, some good friends, called the Silver Elves. Now, Silver Elves, if you are listening tonight, Paratheria is something we really, really want you to get next to. And with that in mind, we want you definitely to get yourselves onto Amazon. And when you get onto Amazon, of course, we want you to get Joe's video, absolutely. That you will definitely do. But when you get on the Amazon, we want you to look up Nine Royal Passions of the Year. Now, this is our Farrarian publication that gives you a portfolio of friends, icons for the every one of the traditional ceremonies for the whole year. That's Ostara, of course, and Yule, and Olmec, and Samhain, Samhain, Samhain. Well, wait, I don't know Samhain, Samhain, and Beltane, and all the rest of them. And these, based upon the tree calendar, and it's called the Nine Royal Passions of the Year, and it's a beautiful folio that we put out, and it's only $9.95, and you can get it on Amazon. We definitely want you to get this, but Silver Elves, please, you know, Farrarian is something you really, really need to look into. Anyway.
There you go. That's
yeah.
Good.
I really, really want them to check it out. So, while I'm going over here and picking up the agenda, which fell on the floor here, anyway.
Did you really talk about Fred's original vision at all, the one he had in 1956?
I was going to let you do that because there's something, you know, I know about it, but I want you to talk about that because,
I'm going to say a few things here.
All right.
Fred had been a real avid student of anthropology, and he'd been reading Margaret Murray and all kinds of Robert Graves and a lot of people from earlier, you know, the earlier writers from the, from the 1600s on, literally. He went way back in his library. But these ideas about the divine feminine were not completely alien into him, but it wasn't dominating his life until 1956 when he had this phenomenal vision that literally overtook him completely. He calls it his thunderbolt vision because it was just like for absolutely unknown reasons, suddenly his whole body and mind were suffused with this awareness that the divine truly is feminine, that the earth and the sky, the land, sky, love body, as he always called it, was feminine in the most basic way in that it gives birth to us, to everything. And this was a phenomenal realization for him, and it changed his life very totally. And then after that, everything that he did with his life was related to that vision. So it was something, and it was a long time ago, really.
Yeah, he was walking across the campus at USC when that happened. Did you know that?
Well, I actually think it was Los Angeles State College or City College, but it was one of these local colleges.
Yeah, it was. You're right. He was walking across the campus, and in the outdoors, but he was walking across the campus, and all of a sudden it hit him. That's kind of similar in a way with me. I was walking across the campus in Northridge, and when I suddenly realized that the lightning flash was the secret to the chakra arrangements, and I can relate to that.
Well, maybe there's something good about being on college campuses. All the ideas are dense, you know, you kind of somehow embody them. He said it was a very thrilling experience, like a very physical experience. He walked around in a daze for a long time after that.
Yeah. In my case, it wasn't that physical, but this reminds me, of course, Fred's visionary poetry and his artwork and all of this is all. All in the kind of the William Blake mode. Now, I guess when number of, a lot of our people are familiar with William Blake, but William Blake's artwork was an influence on Fred, very definitely.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you see this. So what, Fred? But Blake's artwork is mostly male oriented, where Fred's is, of course, turns it around, and his primary focus is the female.
Okay.
Yeah, and his artwork is just absolutely wonderful. You know, when we found some years back, I forget exactly what year it was right now, but we got a call from Fred, and he told me that about this Craig Carnell over in Sierra Madre had discovered his old murals inside the house back in the Hesperides period, or at the beginning of the Hesperides period.
Right.
Fred had rented a house over in
Sierra Madre,
right, as a two-story old house, and he went into a wild funk where he played Daphnis and Chloe, Ravel's Daphnis and Chloe, for hours and hours on end, and drank jugs of red wine and painted murals all over the walls. And he painted these we've seen them. So, you know, these wild, surrealistic, well, I'm more impressionist.
Yes,
surrealist.
Wild, naked people, basically.
All these naked people all over the walls dancing around and all intertwined. And it's just a phantasmagoria of beautiful, smiling, naked, voluptuous women all just all over the walls
and
everywhere. And what had happened was, and so then of course he rented the place, and so then, you know, he left and somebody else moved in, and apparently what they did was, rather than take the murals down or whatever, they just paneled over them. It's just took plywood and paneled over these murals.
Maybe they couldn't quite bring themselves to destroy them, which is wonderful.
I don't know what the reason for it, but anyway, so years and years and years and years went by, and this house must have gone through several tenants, and finally, Cardelli, he bought the place. And so when he bought the place, he got in there, and he thought, well, I ought to pull these plywood panels off the walls, and he started to do this, and he was absolutely astounded at what he found, and then he had to go on a hunt to find where. And meanwhile, Fred, of course, had moved up to Nevada City, California, and Fred was hundreds of miles away, and so Craig started asking people, and finally he found some old codger that told him, "Oh no, yeah, that was that old Fred Allen, crazy old Fred, he did that." So Craig got a hold of Fred finally, and we had the art show. And you remember we had the art show in Sierra Madre, and we had that was a great art show. We hung all the murals, you know. Craig had taken them off the walls by then. Now, of course, we've got those murals. I've got all of them. I got them from Craig, and I've got them up in the temple in Pasadena. So we've saved them. So Fred went through several artistic periods. That was his impressionistic period. And he went from there to the surrealistic period.
Yeah. I want to mention, just by way of his legacy, I think it's important. I actually have all of his books and a lot of his art all intact as a collection. And what we want to do, we've talked several times about this, is make this an ongoing available library so that people who are part of Farifaria or inspired by Farifaria can actually have access to the same sources that inspired him. And, you know, they can look at his art, they can read these books and go, yeah, this is cool, and get into it and have this, you know, maybe have a similar ecstatic experience themselves of relating to nature in a way that, you know, is different than normal. So that's definitely something that's on the burner for us. We're aiming to build a small building to house this library. And then the other big thing we want to do, of course, is the big book of Farifaria, which currently is about 400 pages long, which is really big. But we have to get it all transcribed and formatted, and eventually it will become a book. But Right now it's just on loose leaf binders, but it contains all of his, you know, most important writings, all of his rituals, and his just his various tracts and theses about how things are, and, you know, the inspirations that ran his life.
Well,
it'll be quite a book when it's really done.
Yeah, well, you did it. You've got the book in raw form here, and I'm looking at it right now, and it weighs about 7 pounds.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit. And it's a lot of work involved in that. I know we have Pat Ancona and Ed Fitch helped us tremendously because he came up with a lot of photographs of Fred's work that we wouldn't have otherwise. And so we've saved a lot of the artwork, and in fact most of all of it.
Right.
And yeah. Anyway,
there's one other place that kind of contains a lot of important stuff about Farfaria, which is I did make that other film, not Dancing with Gaia, but the earlier film, A Dance for the Goddess. And
yeah.
That we shot that in 1973. It was we just didn't have enough time to make a film, including all of the 9 royal passions of the year, you know, the actual rituals for each one. But
yeah.
We did make the 2 main solstices and the 2 main equinoxes, and they were completely, each one done in the ideal outdoor wilderness location that embodied that time of the year. So we went up to Chileo Flats and shot the winter solstice when it was snowing ultimately by the end of the day. It was really cold, but everybody was wearing these beautiful, cool, you know, like blue and then purple robes. And, you know, we were out there doing this, you know, lovely ceremony of bringing in all the star formations and having a
My nose was bright red.
Everybody was freezing.
Yeah.
But it was just a phenomenal otherworldly experience to be way up there in the snow doing this phenomenal thing of calling in the stars, literally the spirits of the stars to our circle. It's hard to describe. It was so incredible. And, you know, each one had its own feel, each of these. And so I turned it into a film, and we filmed it in 16 millimeter. I was a film student at UCLA at the time. And so this was a project for me. I did a 1-year-long time-lapse shot of the seasons going through their changes, and then you would see these rituals, and it was a way to tie it together. Fred also made lovely tarot-type images, one for each of the seasons, which precede visually the, you know, the different
celebrations.
So it really, yeah, but these were images that he made specifically for the film originally. These weren't from the 9 Royal Passions. They're similar, but they're not the same one. These
mm-hmm.
different ones. Right, yes. So anyway, that film, it's not really commercially available, but it's going to be. I'm going to announce it on my website at GaiaDancing.com. And I don't know exactly how. Maybe it'll just be available on YouTube. Somehow we're going to get it out there so people can see, you know, just these beautiful seasonal ceremonies being done. Just the highlights of them, not the whole long thing. It's a short 16-minute long film.
Well, I am so glad you have said that, because I really kind of thought that a lot of that you had shot had disappeared, and I'm glad to hear that you have a lot of it left.
Because
we were watching the Tom Snyder show the other night, and we're going to get that, by the way, on YouTube. On our magical YouTube thing, like this, and there's footage in the Tom Snyder show that you don't have in Dancing with Gaia.
Right,
and
I only used a few little clips in Dancing with Gaia because, you know, the whole film is, as I say, 16 minutes long, and Dancing with Gaia just had a few highlights of that.
Yeah. So that's great, Don. Do you think you've got enough to? Have you got enough to put together a feature primarily on Farfaria?
Well, I hadn't thought about that. That's a whole other project to think about. I don't know. I mean, I'll just have to think about that, folks. I'll get back to
that. Well, you know, we could do what we could do, though, and it's just thinking out loud. As long as we've got enough footage, you know, enough footage to justify it, I think you probably do, we could certainly fill in with new footage. And you know, and show artwork and interview you and maybe me a little bit, you know, and Pat Ancona and
Phaedrus in Amsterdam.
Billy,
he read pretty well. And I bet he's out there right now listening.
Who?
A Phaedrus in Amsterdam.
Oh yeah, Peter. Yeah, he's probably out there. We could somehow or other if we could get some footage that would match, and he could send us some, and when that'd be great. I think that's something that might very well be doable. But we will get the Tom Snyder show out there, and that will be available pretty soon. And then you've got some beautiful footage in there. So that's kind of going to work. You know, one of the things about, I'm looking through Nine Royal Passions right now, and actually, this little book really will give people a nice idea of the whole Farfarian experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like William Blake in the sense that Fred has in his own calligraphy, beside the tarot-like icons that he has for each of the seasonals, he has little descriptions in his own decorative calligraphy, like William Blake used to do. You know, William
right.
Blake's been accused of inventing the comic book, and so Fred, of course, a follower of William Blake, and he's done the same sort of thing. So he has these delightful little his own calligraphy, like it says Yule, winter solstice, December 22nd, the festival of first awakening from within the womb of the year's longest night, the holy infant thrusts lustfully. The goddess awakens in gloom of the numbed earth as the sun turns north once more. Life jubilantly strikes its new spark from the naked elements. And then he has a picture of a naked pregnant girl lying there. And, so this is beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Now, Pope, you've got the Nine Royal Passions right in front of you. Let's be timely here. Why don't you pick up the one for the next one coming would be the fall equinox, right? What's the moment of the season sound like?
Just a moment. Fall, you want fall?
Yeah.
Fall, okay. Samhain.
Let's go back.
The festival of Samhain. November 1st, the festival of sinking to soul and prophecy. The divine lovers make all life snug for the long winter sleep. As seeds and litter settle to the earth, dreams and all souls rise from the dense, rooted underground to soften and fuse them. And in the fairy twilight of the year, the dread doors between worlds swing open. The shining lovers descend to their bedchamber of living loam.
Well, that's real nice.
Isn't that nice?
That's for Samhain, right. That's we're not quite there yet. I was trying to hoping to get to the fall equinox, which would be your preceding.
Oh, Harvest Home.
Just because that's what's real right now. That's what we're headed into.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay. I'll back up one and we'll do Harvest Home, Autumn Equinox. The festival of homecoming and release. The nights grow longer than the days. The divine lovers pluck and store the finished fruits. Nectars and ciders are danced out under juice-stained feet. The belly of the goddess swells like a new moon. She makes annunciation. Their work play of the year completed, the holy pair freely roam the cooling hillsides. They loosen all their burdens in the raining gold of autumn leaves. How's that?
So beautiful.
Yeah.
I've noticed just recently, it seems like people are kind of talking about it here and there a little bit, that this business of describing as if it's really a female, as if it's a goddess, as if it's just some female, and what you're actually really talking about is the earth. That seems to be something people are doing a little bit, and maybe have been doing for a long time, but it's kind of an interesting, different religions, you know, maybe on their esoteric side get into that kind of thing.
Well, I know Fred, he'd several times in landforms, in sketching landforms, he would sketch out a female figure lying in a landscape.
Okay.
And he would sculpture a landscape in the form of a female figure. And as, while we're on that subject, Fred was also, and of course, he really was an anthropologist. He didn't have a degree in it, but he was a consummate. He was a wonderful anthropologist. He was a better anthropologist than I was. He really dug in, and he was a voracious reader of anthropological material. So he also studied different magical systems, and one that he really got into was feng shui and into the Taoist star magic tradition, dancing the constellations on the ground. I have a sword. You know, I told you, right over, you've seen it, right over the mantle in Rivendell, I've got this great big two-handed sword of Fred's behind the zodiac circle on it. But all the way down that blade are the constellations painted on the blade of the sword.
Nice.
And Fred used to get out there with that great big two-handed sword, and he'd dance the constellations on the ground.
Well, I wish I could have seen that. I didn't see that.
Well, yeah, that was something to see. In fact, as I recall it, I did. I was able to see it. Let's see. Now, in the next seventh ray I have coming out, the Green Ray, which I keep promising, and all, we have a memorial, of course, to Fred, and I also have that Corey. That piece of his on the quarry, which I thought was very good, and your obituary on him. I think we ought to mention that Svetlana passed on the year following, and we had a memorial service for her at Mont Sauvin, and we buried a photograph of Svetlana right next to where we have Fred's ashes under the big deodar tree. And you wrote the ceremony and officiated at that. It was really, really beautiful.
Yeah, that's something that's part of the corpus of the Fariferian ritual that's available, really, to anybody that wants to be part of Fariferia. It's a phenomenally beautiful ritual that combines elements from the Egyptian Book of the Dead with elements that Fred created, wherein you're taking the various body parts of the person who's passed away and verbally dedicating them and sort of magically creating them to be part of the earth, like that person's bloodstream would become part of the rivers of the earth and that sort of analogy. So you're magically setting the person to rest within the earth body.
This is different than both the Orphic and the Hermetic traditions where they have you going up through the stars, up through the planets and the stars, and in this case Fred reversed that procedure and sent the soul through all the realms of the earth, and yet it's still, regardless of the reversal, it's still a very, very transcendental, and it's very, and I say, very hermetic, because what it is that paradise is where you want it, because according to hermetic tradition, we're the center of the universe. You are the center of the universe. You are. So if you think, if you don't like the where you are and you want to be out there in the galaxy, I suppose that's fine. But Fred was, you know, the great thing about Fred, Fred was very much in tune with galactic cosmic consciousness. He was a wonderful astrologer, but he loved the Earth, and he loved the Earth, and he loved nature so much that was his spiritual focus.
Certainly.
And, it was his spiritual focus, and he spiritualized it to the point where you cannot say that you can't say that there was anything less than divine in what he was doing. It was theurgy. It was theurgy of the highest nature.
I want to say one little thing, if I may. Can I interject?
Sure.
Thanks. I just want to mention before we run out of time here that the biggest thing that Fred did towards the latter part of his life was he developed a whole new technique called chrysochema, and it's completely new. There really isn't anything else out there like it. And it's a technique that he wrote about extensively, and it's going to be in the book of Farfaria, and it might even be available online at some point. But it's a technique for attaining a kind of a ecstasy it's a physical, it's within your own body. It's not gently focused, but it's within your body, like in the same sense that sexuality is like in your body. But it's something that you do using all the power of the earth and all the power of your mind and your body to breathe in these powers that you can develop kind of a moving energy change throughout each part of your body as you imagine this thing that's happening to you. And you develop a kind of an imaginary being who's with you. And he achieved phenomenal ecstasies on a daily, every morning basis using these techniques, which he described to me in enough detail and on enough occasions that I have absolutely no doubt that they are real and that they work. I just thought that was a fascinating thing. It's something.
Well, he has
different.
An extensive article on that now. He has called Ethers of Aphrodite in the Seventh Ray, and that's in the Blu-ray. And it really is quite extensive. I notice you have it also in the Farfarian book, but it's a major article, and so we have that available. And that's in the Blu-ray, and a number of people that are listening already have it. But those who don't, they certainly ought to look at it. It's beautiful. Fred was very much aware of a term called proprioception, which when I first heard it, I said, "What's that, Fred?" He said, "That's the ability to feel things inside your body."
Sounds
to
good.
feel what's going on inside your body, proprioception. And so he was a developer of wonderful Western yoga systems. I mean, he just really, really had a great feeling for it. To sort of recap, because we are getting close to the hour here. To recap on this, you have the film Dancing with Gaia, which is we all agree is a wonderful piece of work, and you have that, and that is available at your website,
which is GaiaDancing.com. I'm going to spell that. GaiaDancing.com.
And we have made available Nine Royal Passions. That's available from Amazon.com, and that's $9.95 from Amazon.com, and we've discussed that. And we're also, as I said, we're going to get the Tom Snyder Show out on YouTube before too much longer. And so before we sign off here, what do you think that we've got here we haven't mentioned that we ought to mention? I mean, is there anything
that crosses
your mind?
Well, if there's somebody that would like to contact me, I'm available by email at info@gaiadancing.com. So that's fine if someone wants to write me a question or just make contact. And I guess we don't really have time to. I was thinking maybe we could do the Gaia Assembly, which is this beautiful piece of poetry that Fred wrote. That's a guided visualization for going down to the center of the earth and repledging, you might say, love to the earth. But that's a little jewel that we'll eventually have available on the website, and I'm hoping that people will get a chance to share it at some point soon.
Okay, it sounds like we're just about wrapped up, and next week we'll be back with with alchemy. Oh boy, alchemy. Anyway, thank you so much, Joe, and that was really great, and I'm looking forward to doing some more work with you, and we got to get a parapherian ceremony done this year anyway. Okay,
so much.
Corey bless. Bye-bye.
Corey bless. Bye-bye.
At Johnson Fitness and Wellness, our treadmills, bikes, and ellipticals are made for more than just a workout. They're made for better sleep, head-clearing energy, and personal victory. And our massage chairs, they're for more than relaxation. They're for recovery, stress relief, and lowering blood pressure. And us, we're here to help with expert guidance, flexible financing, and holiday savings up to 50% off. Visit JohnsonFitness.com or one of our 100-plus stores nationwide today